Yeah, say hello to the bad guy. Bad guy. The good guy coming last place. Smell that dope when I pass by. I lay my money at a fast pace. All right, welcome to Say Hello to the Bad Guy. I'm your host, Locke, and this is the podcast where we drink, smoke, and bullshit about the life of a historic criminal. Now we're talking outlaws and gangsters. We're not going to cover too many serial killers. That's just a little bit dark for me, and this ain't no true crime podcast. Honestly, you can't call this a history podcast because I'm no historian. I'm just a history fan that does some research and bullshits about it with his friends. So speaking of my friends, let me introduce you to my co-host. So first with us today, we got the Duke himself, Dan the Man.
What up, motherfuckers? It's the Hood Billy Deluxe. And man, I'm excited for this one.
From Brain Jerk Entertainment, we got Josh and T-Rup. What's up, fellas? Welcome to the show.
What's up? Good to see you.
So Brain Jerk Entertainment's kind of hard to describe. It's not just a podcast or a YouTube channel. You guys do a little bit of everything. You guys want to talk about that real quick? Let all the listeners know what you guys do over at Brain Jerk.
Well, we are an entertainment company. So we do things like drag queen shows and wrestling shows, and we throw events, we do podcasts, we do reviews. What else? We help in the community. We help with movies. We help with music videos. We're here to entertain you. And then you got T-Rup, who's just one big fuzzy ball of fun.
A little more fuzzy lately now that he's growing his hair out.
Right.
Yeah. Yep, I'm getting.
He had a guy come up to him yesterday. He was like, "Dude, why are you growing your hair out? Stop."
he said, "Just because you're married doesn't mean you have to grow your hair out." And I said, "I got to give her the Fabio for a little bit, just to show her what she has."
And mind you, he's a little hoarse today because he's usually a little louder. But we've had a long weekend of screaming and yelling and excitement.
Yep.
Well, one of the first things we usually do, we always kick it off with the drinks. Usually, Dan, you got something to drink today?
Oh, you know I do. Today I'm trying something a little different from a Big Lake Brewing. It's a Blood Orange Haze. And I've said numerous times on this podcast, I think this is going to be the summer of haze. Everyone seems to be drinking the hazy IPAs, and I'm a basic bitch, so I'm going to do the same.
Boom.
But I got a little bit of that. I got a little bit of Buffalo Trace if I want to get nasty. And I got a little bit of Ghost OG that I'm smoking down on. So I'm a triple threat. All right.
Ghosty.
You two, I know you're not really big drinkers. You guys got anything to drink today or?
Nope. I got myself a Kool-Aid Jammer, tropical punch flavored. Ooh. And there's a bottle of 8 Mile vodka on my desk, but I ain't drinking it.
I drank it, all of it.
What about, I know you guys are pretty big smokers.
Ooh, recently I went to Glass Jar and I picked up $100 ounce of orange creamsicle, dude.
So good.
Ooh, so good.
Honestly, dude, I went to Hash Bash yesterday. I smoked way too much cannabis. I'm taking a hiatus. My wife was like, "Do you want to?" I asked my wife. I was like, "Do you want to smoke before you go?" She's like, "Not really. I can smoke when you get back." And I was like, good, because I don't either.
We've smoked so much this weekend. T-Rep, what was I doing when you came into the office?
Sleeping on the floor. he was that tired that I said, "Hey, just come over and smoke." He stayed over here for a minute and fell asleep on the floor.
No, I didn't fall asleep. I was on my way to T-Rep's and I said, "Dude, I'm so damn tired right now. I'm just gonna lay down and T-Rep can wake me up when he gets here."
Yep.
Take a little Hash Bash Man nap.
Yeah, no doubt.
I haven't taken a nap yet.
Every year I'm like, "Yeah, I'll go to Hash Bash or something." But like every year somebody said like, "Yeah, it's just at the Hash Bash." And I'm like, "Oh, the motherfucker happened already." I always expect it to be like later on in the month, not like the first fucking weekend of April.
Around 4:20 or something, you know.
We actually had a fan come up to us at Hash Bash, and he was a cop. It was an Ann Arbor cop, and at first we were scared, you know. For some reason, the cop walks up. I start hiding the joint. I was like, "Wait a minute, we're at Hash Bash. This is allowed." And he's like, "Oh, you guys doing a podcast?" And we weren't, because the signal was trash in Ann Arbor.
still dope though.
Oh yeah.
Getting noticed by some cops. And that is crazy. You know, so Michigan, it's recreational, is legal anyways. And then plus the hash bash is decriminalized event forever. But
right.
It's one of those things where that panic always still kicks in, even when you're not doing nothing wrong. You're like, oh shit, it's the fuzz, man.
Yeah, he came up and talked to us. I'm like, what are we doing? Oh shit. And then he's like, you doing a podcast? And I'm like, no, sir. Swear to God, I'm not. No, sir.
It's that muscle reaction. Like, yeah. Even when I'm not driving dirty, if a cop gets behind me, my booty hole puckers like out of pure instinct.
Yeah, as soon as he started talking to me, I bent over and wanted to get a cavity search. I personally like him. I just, you know, I was like, hey, man, just check me all the way. I might have drugs in my butt.
Well, I appreciate you guys powering through to be on. Nah, I went basic bitch style myself. I got lighthearted ale. I mean, I do got some what is it called? It's Devil's Ridge coffee bourbon. So I got a little bit of that, but yeah, I hit it pretty hard last night myself too.
You said coffee bourbon?
Yeah. It's Devil's River coffee bourbon.
Ew.
It's pretty good, man.
Yeah.
Well, I got the devil's lettuce, so we all demonic, I guess.
I guess, dude. I'm too weed hungover to be doing that.
That was just the most dismissive.
Coffee and bourbon at the same time, dude. What am I trying to do? Wake up.
It's like Irish coffee, right? It's kind of the same thing.
I don't know. I don't do that.
Now Locke's all offended. Okay, well, that was the show.
Yeah. Okay, well, thanks for joining us. It was good seeing you guys, and
never come back.
So, support for Say Hello to the Bad Guys brought to you by Manscaped, who's the best in men's below the waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision engineered tools for your family jewels, and Manscaped just launched their fourth generation trimmer, the Lawnmower 4.0. So join over 4 million worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer for you. 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code BADGUY at manscaped.com.
And with manscaped.com, you can shave your belly. Also, you don't just have to shave your pubes.
Listen, I promise you, I have the Lawnmower 2.0 at my house, I swear. And it can shave the belly and the nuts in the same motion, baby. I'll tell you that.
Why limit yourself? Beard. Why really limit yourself?
Just don't shave your beard with nut hair shavers. You get crabs in your beard.
you never want to go nuts to face, man. That's not the.
It's never the right ratio.
Dan, you got the Lawnmower 4.0 kit, right?
Oh yeah, and boy, are my balls smooth. No, I just I had me a little Danscape party the other day. I buzz down, use the old nose trimmer because I get those hairs up there. I get the hairs everywhere. Then I used, we got that new pack that got the body wash, the soap, the deodorant. I was just smelling like a little Manscaped baby boy, and I loved it.
So get 20% off and free shipping with the code BADGUY at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use code BADGUY. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tools for the job with Manscaped. Like usual, before we get started, I got to make sure we thank Sixfold Sueno for letting us use his music in the intro. We got to thank Cancer for letting us use his music in the mid-roll. You can follow them both on Instagram at Sixfold Sueno, that's F-O-E, and Cancer is at Cancer the God, the E is a 3. And you can follow us on both TikTok and Instagram at badguypodcast.com and Twitter badguypod, or if you could go to the website badguypodcast.com to get all the links through there. And go to, we got you guys here, was it Brain Jerk? What's the Instagram?
Brain Jerk Entertainment on Instagram, brainjerk.com. And it'll take you to our YouTube for now. But a website is in the works.
Ooh.
Full length feature.
Like a movie, but better.
We'll go ahead and get started. And the bad guy we're covering today is Charles Nicoletti.
This ain't negotiation time. This is Scarface, final scene. Fucking bazookas under each arm. Say hello to my little friend.
Ooh. Chucky the typewriter.
Yep. Charles Nicoletti, a.k.a. Chucky the typewriter. And kind of a bummer of a spoiler alert, we don't have a very good reasoning for the nickname Chucky the typewriter. So
he didn't smack nobody with a typewriter one time.
I think mostly what it is the Chicago crime scene. They have a weird obsession with comparing gang fights to typewriters. So like the Tommy gun, one of his nicknames, the Chicago typewriter. So they just have this weird obsession with gunfights and typewriters. So I'm assuming it has something to do with that.
He's a descendant of Tommy the Quill.
So Charles Nicoletti was born December 3rd, 1916 in Chicago, the youngest of two boys of Sicilian immigrant parents. They were dirt poor. They're in a terrible neighborhood. And his father was a scary, abusive drunk, prone to beating his wife and kids.
All right. So
sounds like a pretty good dude.
Yeah, it starts like the story of 90% of the mobsters we cover. Broke, poor, dickhead, dad.
Right. Or 90% of the serial killers you cover, or 90% of anybody that does anything shitty. They get beat up by their dad.
it's like a Mad Libs of criminals you could put together. But yeah, there's this handful of things that you could pick. Like
pretty much you have a shitty dad, you're going to have a fucked up life.
Or you're going to become, like a police officer and go out. It goes one of the two ways. There's nobody that lands in the middle.
Yeah, it's either you're going to do really good or really bad.
So his abuse got over the top on February 25th, 1929, when 12-year-old Charles came home late and his drunk dad started beating him. So this time Charles started fighting his back and his dad tried choking him and then eventually attacked him with a knife, started chasing him through the house with a knife.
Damn, that shit got real serious real quick.
Talk about escalation.
Right.
It started as Homer Simpson, now went into Norman Bates real quick.
So Charles ran into his father's room where he grabbed his gun from his bedside stand, shot him four times in the chest, killing him instantly.
So he put four in his dad's chest.
Yeah.
And he didn't get in trouble for that because his dad was trying to kill him, of course.
Yeah, so they detained him. His older brother and his mom fought it. But one of the things the police noted was when they detained him, he had like a real cool, calm demeanor. They were trying to tell him, they're like, don't worry about it. You're going to be okay. He's like, why would I be scared? He was coming after me, so I took care of him.
Oh.
Okay, creepy 12-year-old.
I handled it, partner.
It was a different time back then, too. Yep. That 12-year-old probably had a grown man's job, too, back then.
Right. He was busting since he was four.
It's not even whether or not it was justified. Like, I think we can all agree that if someone's chasing you down with a knife, even if it's your own dad,
you gotta shoot him. Yep. If you have access, shoot him.
I question this motherfucker anyway. Who's in the middle of choking a 12-year-old and is like, can't do it. Where's my knife?
Well, they said he fought back. Then what happened? The little 12-year-old kicked him in the nuts and uppercut him.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I've never had to go fisticuffs with a 12-year-old boy. You know, not yet. Let's see if they keep talking shit.
Well if you think about it.
I don't think I'd need a knife for it. I think I could just.
But if you think about it, if he was like drunk and just an asshole anyway, he just knew the kids they're just going to take this beating. And when he grabbed him up, he's not like protecting himself. So the kid could just level his nuts, dude, put him right to the ground.
We are talking about poor Chicago, like hood kids. I mean, this is probably a scrappy fucking 12-year-old.
And I wasn't thinking about it. He had double vision. So like, you can fight one 12-year-old trying to fight two when one of them isn't even there.
They jumping me. They jumping me. I want to knife these motherfuckers.
But even if it is justified for a 12-year-old, be like, oh, no, it's cool. I mean, it made sense, right? Yeah, I'm good.
But yeah, he ends up getting exonerated on charges of self-defense. But I know this is a shocker, but that wasn't a positive event in his life. Everything kind of.
No way. Taking somebody's life is real traumatic, I would assume. You know, especially at 12, dude. I was worried about like, dude, I can probably stick my dick in that at 12.
I don't even know I could stick my dick in anything at 12.
I tried, I'll tell you that.
I'm old. I know when I was 12, that new Ninja Turtles had just come out, you know.
Right.
That was a lot more I was focused on.
Yeah.
Oh no, when I was 12, that was 1997. Anaconda, barbed wire, and Sable from WWE hit Playboy. That was a wonderful year. I want to be 12 years old again.
Yeah.
1997, the Red Wings won the Stanley Cup that year. Yeah, it was a great year.
97. I mean, if that's what got your dick hard, I mean, yeah.
Sure was that back then.
97, I was four. You guys are old. You guys are old.
You didn't know what your dick was.
Yeah. It was as big as it was now, though. So it's like the same, you know.
That's what T-Rup likes about his dick. He gets older, it stays the same size.
Never have to worry about it being too large. Let's put it that way.
So a year later, he drops out of school in the eighth grade, and he joined the local youth gang called the 42 Gang. They were named the 42 Gang after Alibaba and the 40 Thieves.
Mm. So why 42 then? They just had two extras?
Because they thought they were one better.
Well, they were two better.
Well, it's Alibaba and the 40 Thieves, so there's 41 of them.
Oh, okay.
T-Rup struggles with math.
T-Rup.
Hey, he's Chucky the typewriter, not Chucky the calculator, all right?
Yeah. So he joins this local youth gang and other notable members of his gang. And I usually try not to get in other people's names because it starts to confuse the story a little bit. But these are some like quality mob names. So some of these other like notable people that were in this youth gang at the time were Mad Sam DiStefano, William Willie Potatoes Dodano,
Willie Potatoes,
and Sam Momo Giancana.
Potatoes. That dude must love potatoes to have that as a nickname.
No, he was just the only. He was just the only Irish kid, and they were just racist.
Right?
Yeah, or he was the only like kid from like Idaho. Potatoes there. That's all I know.
It's another one like Chucky the typewriter. Not a whole lot of reasoning to why he was called that. He just was Willie Potatoes.
I'm Willie Mashed Potatoes.
Hey, he probably put a potato at the end of his gun for a silencer.
For the record, though, fucking psychopath. Hey, he can go buy whatever he wants. Like, yep. I guarantee you, people are like, hey, Willie Potatoes, whatever, bro. That's dope. Sweet nickname, man.
Yeah.
He got that name because he'd peel your face like a potato.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good one.
I know one thing, these names definitely went downhill. It started with like Mad Dog and ended with Momo.
Yep. You did kind of, yep. Just kind of slipped off a little bit.
Momo is short for Mooney, which was, it's like saying Bugsy at the time. It was, it meant like crazy.
Okay.
So it was like, yeah, for, you know, wild kids and shit like that. That's why there were so many guys back in the day, Bugs Bunny, all these old school gangsters with the nickname Bugs, because it was like that era's word for crazy. So was Mooney, and Momo was like a little nickname of that.
He was hanging out with Sam Teats too.
Yeah, Battaglia. Sam Teats Battaglia.
Yeah.
So once he gets in the 42 gang, and Charles and Momo hit it off, and he soon becomes good. They become good friends. Chucky the typewriter did his first bid in a lengthy rap sheet for conspiracy in 1934 when he was 18 years old, and just pretty consistently got in trouble off and on after that. Now, the 42 gang were notoriously violent, with crimes ranging from vandalism and petty theft to armed robbery and murder. And they became one of the most feared juvenile gangs in Chicago. And they started running like low-level errands for the Chicago outfit.
They were like the top minor league team, and they like did different stuff for the major leaguers now and then.
Triple A, fucking just ready. I'm ready to go in, coach. Just tell me when.
I love how you named off all these crimes, like from vandalism, armed robbery, car theft. And they were, you know, one of the top youth gangs. Like, what the fuck does a youth gang got to do to make it to the top?
Right. That is fucking pretty intense for some children.
What classifies them as youth? Are they like, oh, I mean, I know young, but like, is it like an age group? Are they a specific age group?
So they it was a pretty wide range in ages. They were between as young as 9 and as old as 20.
Fucking A, that is a youth group. Okay. But that's still under 20, I think, is young. That's okay.
Well, when Chucky the typewriter started running with him, he was 13. So.
Oh yeah, he already had a body under his belt though. He was
13 with a body, yeah.
Well,
in crime years he was like 32, 34.
Yeah, what'd you do to want to be in a gang? Oh, I fucking killed my dad. I put 4 in his chest. Oh, that's okay.
Oh, damn, I was going to go break that window or spray paint something. Fuck, yeah. Man.
I was thinking about pushing over that fruit cart, but damn.
Like, I'm just pissed off at my dad for fucking grounding me, dude. I'm sorry, dude. I just want to play PlayStation.
You can tell Dan's been on the podcast a lot because he mentioned flipping over fruit carts. That was an early one of the 42 gang's early racket was flipping fruit carts.
the times back in the day.
Yeah.
Urban cow tipping.
That's how like the purple gang started and shit. They used to they would go to like those market areas and they tell the people, hey, give us some money. You know, the market guys. And if they didn't pay up these kids some money, they just fucking flip their fucking fruit cart over and run away. And you're like, shit.
Good luck selling all your melon now, Buster. They're all smashed. Yeah.
Just fucking make some wine now, you piece of shit. Get out of there. Damn. Hey,
like those apples.
You fucking kids. When they're running away. fucking kids.
So Momo was a rising star. He was a skilled getaway driver, and he had a reputation as being street smart. He was a top earner, and he had a ruthless violent streak.
You said he was 18 at this point?
Who, Momo? He's like 20. So he was like one of the older guys.
He was like the counselor.
So yeah. What? You're 21 and you're just fucking now you got to do something else.
you're kicked out of the gang when you hit 21.
Well, at that point, it's either you get called into the major leagues or just kind of hang it up, buddy.
Dude, go flip over fruit stands by yourself now, dude. Like,
it was actually kind of like a promotion. So he became the first one out of the 42 gang to become a made man in the Chicago Mafia.
Okay.
But as soon as he got made, he started bringing up all his old little kid gangsters up with him. And most notably, Chucky, who he was like his right-hand man. So it was once he got made, he was like, dude, I got some real business for us to do. And started bringing in those guys. So like all those guys earlier that I said were like notable gangsters, like Mad Sam DiStefano, who he was, even though he was like one of the top earners, he couldn't get made because he was such a psychopath. Everybody was afraid of him. And they were like, no, we're not going to let him be a made guy, but he could be a top earner. But Sam Giancana, he brought all those in after he got made.
So because he was a loose cannon, he got... So I wouldn't be able to be a made man because I'm a loose cannon.
Well, you wouldn't be able to be made because you like too much flowers too much.
Yeah, you're a little too nice.
I would go do whatever the bad shit they wanted me to do, and I'll just leave a rose petal or something.
They'd say, hey, T.
They would call me Tyler Rose.
I think you need to go smell those flowers, and when you bent over to smell the flowers, they'd blow your fucking brains out.
You're right, dude. Every time I bury somebody, I just plant a real nice garden plot around it. Like, it's going to have fruits. It's going to be very nice. Apple tree in 10 years. It's going to be so nice.
You know how we the character we played in the Cult Affairs? That would be you back then, too.
Yeah.
Oh, the black one?
Black one? Oh, I'm sorry.
See, but that's why you'd want to be murdered by T-Rup, though, because most of these people, you end up, like, getting smashed in a trash compactor or in some fucking swampland, you know? You'd be putting people like it by some lilies where the sun comes up as it comes over the mountain and shit. Like, oh, it's a beautiful spot, at least.
The roots of the plants are going to eat your body. You're just going to be part of a beautiful lily field. I'm telling you. You know what? I do want to. You can kill me, dude. It's all right. Just be fertilizer. You'll make them so much prettier.
Don't be scared.
He kills people like Carol from The Walking Dead. Just look at the flowers.
Yep. Just look at them.
Yeah, right. He would kill people like Lenny from Mice and Men. He would just cuddle them to death.
Just squeeze them as he...
I'm sorry, Josh. I just wanted to pet him.
And I just want to love him and hold him. That's what we're doing.
Oh, you idiot.
So Sam's rapidly climbing up the leadership ranks. He's a big-time gangster. And it helps he's got this great crew underneath him. And... He's the brains and he's ruthless, and Chucky's the muscle. And as he's going up, Chucky moves up with him. So he goes from associate to made man. And by 1950, he was a professional mob hitman partnering with Felix Milwaukee Phil Eldericio. The pair was considered two of the most proficient hitmen in Chicago outfit history. Over the next 15 or so years, they'd be questioned and suspected in dozens of murders. Oh, enough evidence was never found to ever charge him with anything. But they just kind of left this swath of dead bodies all over the place.
So they knew. So the police knew they were killing these guys. They were just that good that they weren't getting caught.
Yeah. Well, and Chicago's notoriously more corrupt than most of these other cities I mean, they're all corrupt, but Chicago is really bad from the top to the bottom.
Still to this day.
To this day.
I wish I had a drop board so I could drop that fucking Deontay Wilder in there.
Yeah, no doubt.
I'd want that one, Deontay Wilder to this day. And I don't know if you ever heard that Tyler Creator drop where he says, we're doing bad shit.
Oh, yeah. We're out here doing bad shit today.
How about you, that ladle in my ass drop, right?
Yeah. That's a Brain Jerk Entertainment fucking staple.
Yep. I could play it right now.
I'll just fucking... I'll put a ladle on my ass for you. That was about friendship, and I'll say that forever. That was about friendship. It wasn't about putting ladles in the asses. It was about my loyalty to you, Josh, piece of shit.
Loyalty's a good thing.
And now you got the I Don't Pop Molly one?
And then this one.
I don't sell Molly no more.
Man, I need a drop board. Since I don't got a drop board, I just got to call you guys to play with yours.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, we're in the middle of a podcast right now, but can you drop that Molly one? I did a cool joke 4 minutes ago. Just drop it.
So eventually, Momo Giancana, he becomes the acting boss by the late 50s. And Chucky the Typewriter is known as the Jack McGurn of his era.
What does that mean?
Jack McGurn? Well, he was just another top killer. He was a top earner. He was, wasn't he Capone's right-hand man?
Yeah, so he was Capone's guy. As Capone was riding to the top, he was like his right-hand man. And he's probably planned the St. Valentine's Day Massacre. Most of the big hits that we know of Capone... Capone was the boss. He wasn't out there doing the hits. Most of that was Jack McGurn.
Okay.
Oddly enough, Jack McGurn was a Sicilian dude.
Oh, really?
Yeah. His name was Vincenzo Gibaldi, but he started boxing and nobody cared about Sicilian boxers. They only wanted to see Irish boxers. So he changed his name to Jack McGurn.
Okay. So what the Momo was acting as the boss and then
Chucky
would have been his number two then.
Well, so he was his number two, but not like in leadership. So Chucky was never an underboss or anything like that, but he was kind of his right hand, like his muscle.
Okay.
He was like the drop the thunder hand, his fucking smack hand.
What you're supposed to be.
Yeah. So he's his guy. He doesn't have a leadership position. He's not like the underboss, but he moves his way up. And once he gets into the 60s, he does start some of his own rackets, but it was all the muscle stuff. So he was big in extortion and gambling, which are your muscle rackets, because those are the fuck you pay me rackets. You don't got to be smart. You don't got to figure out enough. You just got to be willing to take your money from other people. So those are the traditional tough guy rackets, are gambling and extortion. Little murder on the side.
Little murder.
So I was doing a little bit of research, and these guys had gun compartments in their cars, secret gun compartments back then.
Yeah, so that was... In 1962, both Chucky the Typewriter and Milwaukee Phil, the police got a call that there was like two suspicious guys like scoping an area out. And they get there and it's Milwaukee Phil and Chucky the Typewriter. And they're sitting in a car checking this place out. And they start looking at the car. And the car, it had secret gun compartments and it had like different buttons that you had to hit and stuff like that. But some of the buttons, there was a compartment behind the driver's seat where you could hang like shotguns and they had handguns and stuff like that. But they also have buttons so that you could like alternate the taillights and the headlights and switch them on and off so that like you couldn't follow them or make it easy to tail people.
You said this is in the 60s?
Yeah, it was a 1962 Ford, the car was.
Jeez. Imagine what we could do nowadays. If they did this shit back in the 60s.
I just like to think of like a 1960s exhibit out there. Yo, we gonna pimp your ride. Yo, we're going to put a shotgun rack in the glove compartment. You're going to have missile launchers in the back seat. And yo, an aquarium on the dash.
You push this button, you get nails fall out the license plate.
Yeah, this one squirts oil out the bumper. Yeah. This one, a drop a banana.
This one spring loads the wheels.
Yo, we got red shells come shooting out the front. Yeah.
And all the fucking crazy shit with that car, the cops called it a hitmobile and it was registered to some fake name and a fake address. So they tried to get him on the car, and you know, they got these high powered mob lawyers, and they ate him up. And they're like, it's not their car. They borrowed the car from a friend. See, it's registered to this dude. So then they went to see where the car was registered, and there was nobody there. And all they were able to try and bust him on was registering a car under a fake name. And then
and that's all they could get.
and then the lawyers for sure beat that, because that's like some misdemeanor small claim shit. And so they fucking smacked that shit down. And basically all they could do was they said, all right, well, then this guy, I forget what the name was, whatever's on the registration. They're like, well, then he's got to come pick up the car. And nobody could ever pick up the car because it wasn't a real dude. But they ultimately got away with it completely, just because like that's all the cops could do is like, well, then we're keeping the car then. Fuck you.
And they were watching the building to blow somebody's head off. Mm-hmm. That's what they were doing.
They probably had already done that a few times before, right. I would assume.
Well, a couple of examples of one. So one of his murders that they for sure kind of got him on was he had two business partners, a guy named Paul Libriola and James Weinberg. And they ran an insurance company where they sold damage claims insurance to businesses. And Chucky the typewriter was in on it. So it was just super legal extortion.
Super legal.
As long as it's legal.
Right. Well, I mean, they had a legit insurance company. So they're like, hey, do you want this damage insurance? It's very expensive.
As they're smashing things.
Yeah. Like, okay. Well,
hey, your bread here might have a hole in it if you don't get some more fucking insurance.
That's crazy, because that's the number one. We've said it since the beginning of this podcast. That's the beginning of the mob. That's the Black Hand. The whole like, hey, nice place you got here. It'd be bad if something happened to it. That's the classic mob scam. And now it took till this guy to be like, hey, you guys know if we fill out the right paperwork, we could just do this and it's not illegal.
It's just a business.
Yeah. That's why they call him the typewriter. He just
guys.
Write forms.
I started this cool new LLC.
Yeah. It's called Pay Us or We'll Break Your Shit.
Yeah.
And Associates.
Yeah. Be ashamed if it burnt down LLC.
Yeah.
Be ashamed if it burnt down.com.
But as Paul Libriola and James Weinberg started to think at some point, like, I mean, we could probably just do without the outfit and just sell the insurance. We're doing pretty good. And then on March 15th, 1954, both of them were found garroted to death in the trunk of a Pontiac parked on the street.
Garroted? What is that?
That's the like piano wire. It's called a garrote.
So they were choked to death?
Yeah. So yeah. If you ever see, like, sometimes you'll put like a piece of wood on each end with a wire between it or, you know, something like that.
Okay. Yep. Okay.
Strangle them.
That's the strongest. The strong ones can rip your head off with that thing.
See, if his dad would have had that, he wouldn't have needed the knife.
Right.
This whole story would have been over a long time ago.
No, but I mean, those things are significantly worse than just being choked, because it's a thin wire. So you're kind of like slowly getting your neck like sliced at the same time. So you're getting choke sliced.
Yeah. And if you try to block it with your fingers, they're getting chopped off.
Yeah. That shit just saws right through.
Like cutting through cheese, you know, that's what all that is. That's just a long cheese cutter.
Yeah.
Ooh.
But to clarify, these are the two dudes that said we should stop doing crimes and just do this full time legally, right? They're the ones that I found. See, every time the mobs are like, hey, you know, we can get rich and make tons of money and just not be mobsters. Always the mafia's like, yeah, we don't like that. You're out. And they don't let you just do that. They're like, no, we're going to kill you for even suggesting such.
How would you even think that's an idea?
How dare you suggest we go legit?
The fuck is this guy thinking?
What kind of fun is this? It's like the NHL, you know? Hell no, we don't want to go to that European style.
We legitimately covered a guy one time where he just said, look, we could all make more money and nobody will die. And we just have to split this up and stop fighting. And the people were like, this one's a little slow, ain't he? Like, what is he talking about? He doesn't make any sense. Like, no, it makes perfect sense, dude.
Hey, you guys want to get rich and not murder people? No, pussy. What are you thinking?
Yeah, dude, we don't know how to make money without death.
How can you make money without killing people?
In 1962, he was involved. He was with Anthony Spilotro when Anthony Spilotro made his bones during the torture murder of 24-year-old Billy McCarthy, which ended with McCarthy's head being put in a vise until his eye popped out.
Oh, that's it. He didn't like close the vise. He could have squeezed that whole motherfucking thing.
Well, he was trying to get information. So he was trying to get his partner's name, and the guy wouldn't give it to him. So he put his head in a vise and he kept tightening it. And eventually his eye popped out. And when his eye popped out, he gave up the name. And then he ended up killing him after that.
Well, at that rate, what the fuck are you saying shit for? Your eye popped out.
Now I take back all the cuddle jokes with T. This motherfucker squeezed his head in a vise so his eye popped out. T's like, oh, that's it?
That's it, dude.
He didn't like try to fuck the hole or nothing. Like, yeah,
he didn't cauterize it with his penis.
What is this, fucking amateur hour?
Yeah, dude.
So that scene, it was kind of done in Casino with Joe Pesci, where he popped that guy's eye out, and that character that Joe Pesci played was based on Anthony Spilotro, who is a real mobster.
Okay.
So. Anthony Spilotro, there's a quote from Frank Colata about that day when he was talking about Charles. He said, Chucky's a heartless guy. He was eating pasta when his eye popped out.
He was eating pasta. Wow, that was.
Well, I mean, when you're hungry and you're fucking always busy, you got to eat when you got to eat.
Well, and it's not like he knew the eye was going to pop out. It just happened to pop out while he was eating pasta.
But that's how cold-blooded this dude was. They're torturing some dude. Trying to get information, and he's over here twirling his fork in some pasta.
Yep.
It'd be sweet if he had some meatballs.
Some red sauce.
And then when the eye popped out, he put a little meatball in there.
Threw that eyeball in there, yeah.
Well, yeah, this is 1962. He's been at this so long. He's like, oh, let these kids play, man. I got stuff to do.
He's over here questioning, slurping up noodles all at the same time.
He's like, you better tell him. You better tell him, dude.
I got 4 noodles left. You don't say nothing by then, you're going to die.
Yeah.
He's just back there coaching. He's like, no, you got to put your whole shoulder into it. Otherwise, you're going to get tennis elbow. You got to put the vice slowly.
I'll show you how to do it when I swap this shit up with some bread. Come on.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a quick smoke break, refill our drinks, and we'll be back in a minute.
Shackles to break out of. They cower, solo but mob them, and they crowd us. Spilling in the street with heat like hot lava. Pop bottles, molotovs tossed, and rocks follow. Ominous disciples like vipers, they strike quickly. Come at me like an army, I'm tearing you down with me. Spit like a baron, rulers of bread like Kaiser. Roll with the goal and get beaten like outsiders. These amateur animals swing in the wrong jungle. Climbing the wrong vines mean these lions will snuff you. Concrete wilderness building our own structures. Fighting our own. For survival with rivals with throat punches. Court of honor corroded as soon as it was awarded. Celebrations were thwarted before they could be supported. Rolling thunder bombarded them, flaming dark put a part in them. Separate and disarm them and send the bulls to the parliament. Operation Niagara, Viet Cong and the battle with. Landmines and grenades and flamethrowers to scatter them. Dear mama, this battle is harder than what we thought it'd be. Every part of me scarred, I'll be recognized when they mortar me.
It's almost time to run, put on your army helmets now. You're running toward the sun with all your guns, defenses down. Flashes everywhere, the lights create an atmosphere. Water in your lungs, you pray for death, but life is here. You're about to die, face it, you're about to die. Zero sand in your glass, fuck it, you can't even cry. Put a dagger to your neck, just to keep yourself in check. Put a dagger to your neck, just to keep yourself in check. Everybody grab a side as you fight to stay alive. Dancing on a hand grenade so you can die and they survive. Silver bullets in the sky, dropping 7-second death. Scattering the children, run, rub until there's nothing left. Ashes in the water, sons and daughters holding flags up high. Wallow in the harbor as the military tanks arrive. Penetrate the border with disorder like an animal. Every war has the honor of turning kings into cannibals.
All right, we're back. So everything we covered so far, like, so that's actually most of the mob stuff. I mean, we still got some more, but Chucky the Typewriter is known very, he's not a popular guy in the mob circuit. Like people that are into, you know, criminal history, mob history, he's not a big time guy. His claim to fame is more in the conspiracy theory bracket. So this is where he's most famous and this is where you'll find most information on him. So he was Sam Giancana's top hitman. And Sam Giancana, once he became boss, he started becoming, he was huge. He was one of the first giant, like probably bigger than Capone, because Capone was big, but he was big in Chicago. After Capone went away, Chicago grew into, you know, they grew to Vegas and the West Coast. Like the way it was set up is New York, the five families, they had the East Coast, but everything west of Chicago was Chicago. So they had this giant empire. And Sam Giancana was one of the first huge mob bosses. So he was into all kinds of like making like international deals and stuff like that. So one of the first big things, Chicago mobsters with the Trafficante family in Florida were making a lot of moves into Cuba, setting up gambling operations, like their own kind of private Vegas. And the government was super corrupt down there. So they were just going in and paying them all kinds of money and setting up all these gambling operations. And they invested millions into it beforehand. And then the big revolution pops off and Castro takes over and Castro kicks out all the government and he kicks out the mob. And he's like, fuck that. You're not putting your hands in the people's money's pocket no more. Get the fuck out of here. And chases the mob out of Cuba. Sam Giancana had a lot of money invested in that. And he wanted to get back into power in Cuba so they could get this operation launched again. So it's pretty common. I mean, with redacted files and stuff, it's pretty known that the CIA tried to assassinate Fidel Castro and brought in the mob to try and help him with it. And there was all kinds of mob families that were down because everybody had gambling interests in Cuba. But Sam Giancana was like the biggest one. Chucky the Typewriter, Charles Nicoletti's been named as one of the people that was lined up to put the hit on Fidel Castro. And was sent into Cuba to start putting together information to try and see how they could do a hit to take him out. So that was kind of the first big thing that he's known for in the conspiracy theory racket, is that Chucky the Typewriter was going to kill Fidel Castro for Sam Giancana working for the CIA.
Now, do they think that just based on the fact of the timeline, he's one of the top enforcers, so just makes sense that he would? Or are there a lot of things like he was in Cuba at these times and shit like that?
There's a lot of different...
Is it just a dismissive thing, or does it hold some water?
I mean, it holds some water. I mean, I don't know that it is in Cuba, but there's a lot of testimony and stuff that shows that he was the guy that was at least moving forward on it, which, like we were talking about with Jack McGurn, as one of the things he was known for, it was the reason his hits were so good was he just didn't show up and try and shoot people. He put a lot of planning and effort into it. So there's no real evidence that he was going to try and kill Fidel Castro. There's probably evidence that he was surveilling Castro. Who knows? But to be honest, he's actually the second gangster we've covered that's been accused of or been talked about as being involved in a hit on Fidel Castro.
Wasn't Fidel Castro, like, didn't he survive, like, 237 fucking hits in 1 year or something stupid like that.
Well, shit, because everybody's trying to kill him, man.
Everyone.
Like his own people, fucking
JFK, you know.
Well, so that's the other big one is Sam Giancana hated JFK. So he worked out a deal with JFK's dad to help his son when he was still just a senator. When JFK was a senator, he made a deal with his dad to help him get voted into president. But in return, they would be more lenient on organized crime and focus on getting Fidel Castro out of power in Cuba. And then, so basically what they did was they used like union labor and box stuffing and all. I mean, the Chicago tricks they've been doing since 19 fucking 10, you know what I mean? They fucking pull out all the stops and they rig elections. And they probably got JFK elected president by getting him the Illinois vote by winning him Chicago. So they get JFK and presidents in the office and Sam Giancana's like, fuck yeah. You know, we got the president of the United States in our pocket. This is our plan. And JFK immediately makes his little brother, Bobby, attorney general. And he just goes on a manhunt and starts trying to take out all the, you know, mobsters one by one. And it's a shit show and all the mob hates him. So there's a conspiracy theory that links. I don't want to get too into the conspiracy theory. I could explain a little bit that links Chucky the Typewriter to the JFK assassination. And here's kind of how they say it worked. Let me show this to you. So in the conspiracy theory, they say that Chucky the Typewriter was on the fourth floor of the Dale Tex building, which is right here, which as you can see is right across the street from the Book Depository building where the actual shots were shot from. So the conspiracy theory will say that working with the CIA, Sam Giancana set up everything to have him killed. Lee Harvey Oswald was supposedly on the CIA side where Chucky the Typewriter was like the mob representative, but it's a pretty complicated thing. Like we'd take a whole episode to kind of cover the conspiracy theory on him being involved in that, but he was. So people think Sam Giancana was in on it. And there is some evidence to show that he was in Texas. He was showing a guy around that ended up going to prison later, but I don't know a lot about conspiracy theories, but those are the two biggest theories that Chucky the Typewriter connected with. Is the Castro assassination and the JFK assassination.
It says that the JFK one was spread by Playboy magazine in 2010.
I like to believe like all of the JFK assassination conspiracies. Like there were so many different killers that were there at the same time. It was like the shooting gallery, like when you get shot to death. Like there's so many people there, they don't know who actually did it. Like when JFK went down, there's like five different hitmen on the grassy knoll, a couple in the building. They were all like, wait, who the fuck did that? Like they were all just as confused.
I think the best, it was the number one mobster in the world that did it. George Bush Sr.
Oh, dum, bum, bum.
Man, he keeps coming up. So we've had someone recommend that we cover George W. or not George W. Big George, and then it came up on one of our episodes too. So that's like it's like Beetlejuice. I think that's the third time you say it. Like now the George Bush episode is gonna have to appear. But we've had two guys implicated in that we've covered that were connected to the Castro assassination. We've had two guys we covered connected to the JFK assassination. He's the only one we covered that was connected to both.
Ooh.
That's special.
How old was he at this time?
So that would have been 62. He was born in, JFK was killed in 63. He was born in 16. So been like 47.
47. Okay.
Man, how many times are you going to make Lock Dude math this episode?
It sucks that I'm actually pulling it off. Like I'm the mathematician of the group. We are fucked.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. We are in bad shape.
Lock the calculator.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he did some time in 64 in Michigan, Milan, Michigan, on a narcotics charge. And at some point, he gets approached by the FBI, and they were trying to flip him, which he wouldn't do. He gave him his contact, like his employment information, his verification, which checked out. And he wouldn't flip, but the FBI still put out a rumor to say that he was flipping, to just kind of throw that out there. And then in the late 60s, Giancana, he flees to Mexico. He's not the boss no more. He eventually ends up getting killed. In 1977, the United States House Select Committee on Assassinations they call in Charles Nicoletta and Lee Harvey Oswald associate George De Morin's child to testify. On March 29th, 1977, just before he was supposed to go give testimony, while sitting in his car at the Golden Horns restaurant, Chucky the Tuprider was shot 3 times in the back of the head. Now, his car was still running, and it ended up overheating and catching on fire. And that's when somebody called the cops. And he actually wasn't dead. He ended up dying in the hospital later. So I don't know how you get shot in the back of the head 3 times and then sit through a flaming car and then not die on the spot. But he died at the hospital way later.
Them 22 bullets ain't that big.
Yeah. And Chicago was known for not only using 22 bullets, but they used to think that if they loaded themselves and didn't put enough powder in it, that it would make it quieter. And it really just led to a bunch of fucking people like Ken Edo, who we covered, getting shot in the head and not dying. But that same day, George De Morin's child committed suicide.
Imagine that.
So I don't know. I don't know conspiracy theories. Not a big conspiracy theory guy, but
hey, they've been using that tool forever, huh? I just seen that tool used back in 2021.
So it's like you hear like him implicated in these like CIA assassinations, and you're like, yeah, probably not. And then he gets shot in the back of the head the day before he's supposed to go testify in front of the Senate, and you're like,
he probably committed suicide by shooting himself in the back of the head.
The commonly accepted theory is that Harry the Hook Ailman shot him in the back of the head because the mob thought that he might have been snitching, but nobody really knows.
So snitches don't get stitches, they get shot in the head.
Well, because that stitches are regard, you can't stitch that up.
Yeah. See, I think we should switch up. That should be the phrase, snitches don't get stitches, because we're not trying to heal you, we want you to bleed out. Why would you give them stitches?
That was the first run, but it was too wordy.
Yeah. Or maybe because they got to cut your body open to take your organs out and then stitch it back up. Snitches get stitches.
Or it rhymes, and everybody just loves a good rhyme.
Yeah, who doesn't?
This is another classic tale of just stick to the mob. When you get into politics, then you're going to die.
You're right.
Yeah.
Fishy.
So yeah, the dude James Files, he did do a report with Playboy in 2010 where he said that he claimed to be like a grassy knoll shooter. And then there's a guy, Chauncey Marvin Holt, who claimed to be one of the three tramps. And they both said that Charles Nicoletti was one of the shooters. So James Files, though, he was a Vietnam vet and a Bay of Pigs operator. But then he was in prison on a felony. And he's one of those guys that says like, oh, it was a conspiracy. And they're like, he's crazy, don't listen to him. Like, I don't know when he was crazy. Was he crazy when you were using him as an operator in Cuba?
That's what I was just going to say, the Bay of Pigs, huh? This guy's full of conspiracies.
So that's the story of Chucky the Typewriter.
So say goodnight to the bad guy. Come on. The last time you're going to see a bad guy like this again, let me tell you.
And not a single typewriter in the fucking story.
At the end of the story, you should have done the typewriter noise, like ching.
And you know, I was also seeing here, it says even though, you know, all these stories about him killing people and stuff, it was he's only killed about 20 people for the mob, it said.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you could keep it to only 20, I mean, that's only a score of people.
As a career hitman, you know, maybe he's got more bodies before he got that title. We don't know.
Well, also, he's another classic case of someone who's like good at his job. So it's hard to keep count of exactly how many. I mean, shit, he's the only guy, like Locke said, that was hooked on like two of the biggest conspiracies that there are, the JFK and Fidel Castro. So yeah. He's surrounded with so many conspiracies and shit. Who knows how many he killed?
That'd have been a lot.
And then when you think about it, the CIA was involved in all of that.
Yep.
And shit, when you think about it, he started when he was 12, joined like a gang of hooligans out here doing crimes. Like, he was probably had 20 in his teens. Like, there's no telling.
Hey, I heard one of the, when I was doing research for this one, I heard somebody say that the mob has always been to the CIA what the 42 gang was to the mob.
Minor leagues.
Yeah, it's just like they're having to do their little stupid dirt, like their silly stuff. Like, yeah, well, we need somebody to kill somebody in Cuba and we can't get killed. Send in a mob guy to do it.
Yeah, because if you send in a mob guy, you can't get caught.
All right. Send in James File, the operator. Now you got to set him up and make him look crazy and shit. That's a lot of work. Just send in the mob guy.
That's I always say, hey, I'm never going to kill myself. So if someday I've killed myself, guess what? I did not. It was CIA.
What is this, your Jesse Smollett moment? Yeah. I am not suicidal. I am not trying to kill myself.
Just know that.
No, but this is one of those weird timelines where, like back in the day when the mob was intertwined with politics, well, even since the beginning, like you said, they've always done like union busting and like ballot box illegal shit and like getting people voted. They've always been intertwined with politics. And I think the JFK era was the last time where it was like, yeah, the government just uses the mob to do things. Because then after this, they just shut down the mob, and anything the mob used to do, that's what the government does now. Like all the, hey, guys, you know, we can do all this shit, but legally, that's what the government did. And now
we can even kill people legally.
Yeah, and now if there's like they want Fidel Castro assassinated, yeah, they're not sending in the mob or nothing. Like the government does it themselves. They just shut their shit down and stole all of their shit.
Well, you know, the story is the mob is actually who taught the government how to properly catch them. You know, they had to catch all these guys on weird charges like tax fraud and tax evasion and stuff. They couldn't catch them on the murders.
Even to arrest them, like even before all that stuff, we covered these guys. They used to make up laws like vagrancy. You know, vagrancy just meant kind of like whatever, because these guys were so slick. They knew that if they could get them arrested, that they would have a gun or something on them, but they just needed a reason. So they came up with a law named vagrancy, where they could just basically frisk mobsters for whatever, because they couldn't catch them doing fucking crimes. You know, so like, I don't know, vagrancy, man.
Well, see, that's like one of their dirty tricks is they just made up laws and then they just stole shit. Like one of their main schemes used to be the lottery that used to be illegal. It was called running numbers. And now that's a big go-getter for the government. Like that's their shit. And then like this guy's convicted of 20 plus murders and the CIA was trying to flip him and have him be one of their guys.
Yeah.
Yep.
So if we was going to make a movie about Chucky the typewriter, you guys haven't seen a picture yet. Who would you cast to play him? You guys got any ideas?
I'd say Chucky, huh?
I'd say he's redheaded.
Just because of Chucky?
Yeah.
Because of Rugrats?
He's that odd redheaded Sicilian?
Yep.
Let's have Kiefer Sutherland play him.
I'm a Kiefer Sutherland fan, so I'm down to watch him play anyway. And he could definitely pull off Weirdo. Well, here's pictures of Chucky the typewriter.
Oh, dude, he looks like a normal dude.
Well, they usually do.
Yeah, he ain't got no tentacles or nothing. No, I don't know. That one on the left, he's old as fuck, it looks like. That one on the right, he looks kind of like fucking the Hulk. What's his name?
Mark Ruffalo.
Yeah, Mark Ruffalo.
I think the one where he's younger, he kind of looks like the dude that plays Monk or whatever that's on Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Tony something, ain't it?
Shalhoub?
Yeah, Tony Shalhoub. You know who would play him? It doesn't have so much to do with the picture, but I was thinking Sebastian Stan, the guy who played Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
If he like reprised, like was Winter Soldier in the first one, like he was legit scary. He was like the boogeyman would pop up and fuck you up and bounce. He would be good there.
All right. So now we got to do the DEFCON scale. Standard DEFCON scale is 5 to 1, 5 being the lowest, 1 being the highest. On the Bad Guy podcast, there's no good guys. So 5 would be Lee Murray, who's your drug dealing, kidnapping, bank robber. And 1 is the Purple Gang, who's got multiple gang wars, multiple massacres, and they're killing people on the street. So on a scale of Lee Murray to the Purple Gang, where would you rate Chucky the typewriter?
Well, he was implicated in two of the biggest conspiracies of all time. So I can't give him a 5 or 1, but I could give him at least a 2.5.
I'd honestly give him a solid 2. If he was real famous for murdering people. He was the number, you know, and then he fucking was going to murder two leaders of countries, and or at least was thought to do it. So he actually was cynical about murdering people. So
especially if he's the one to do it.
Yep. If he was the one to do it, he would be a 1 all the way.
Yeah, I arrive at a 2, but almost for the same reason that Josh said. I would give him a 1, but I can't do that because 1 is reserved for extra violent people. Like, he was skilled at his job, and he definitely purposely took the enforcer hitman route instead of, you know, running his own crew and doing all that. He definitely was a violent guy, but there were no stories of him like, yeah, and if he was out at the bar, he got into this or that fight or anything like that. He was very business with it.
Very professional, yeah.
Yeah, but he was so prolific and so good at his job too. And just to be, like Josh said, attached to not 1, but 2 of the biggest things, the assassinations, you got to go with the 2.
You got to think too. They said he sat there and stalked these people and planned his murders out. So he was a pretty bad guy.
He could be an cerebral assassin.
Yeah, something. Yeah. He was deep into it. If he was trying to go that, they never found out his crime. So he was really smart at. He was good at killing people.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of wild that for all the killers that we do, I mean, we got people who their AKA is killer. Like numerous guys with the nickname Killer. And this guy is like one of the best. And his fucking nickname's the Typewriter.
Yeah.
Shit and is bullshit.
I don't think that you said 20. They think 20. I think at least like, I bet they couldn't just find out he did at least fucking 40 or 50 more.
Well, I mean, just to be recruited.
He was old, dude.
And mentioned in those assassinations, you know. If you're recruited to assassinate these presidents of countries, you gotta be some sort of ultimate badass, I would think.
I'm not hiring a guy with 20 bodies to shoot a fucking president.
Yeah, that's true.
So we're gonna call him a DEFCON 2.
Take it to DEFCON 2.
You heard that, gentlemen. DEFCON 2.
So before we go, when we talk about Brain Jerk Entertainment, well, you give them all the socials where they can go check out everywhere they can find you guys at?
Well, you can go to brainjerk.com. It'll take you to our YouTube, Brain Jerk Entertainment on company on YouTube, Brain Jerk Entertainment on Instagram, Brain Jerk Entertainment company on Facebook. Use the whole goggle.com, find Brain Jerk. We're there. We're ready to party.
Yep, I'm a big fat guy with face tattoos. Can't miss me.
And our motto is, you know, it's we're more than a podcast, and we like our hands in a little bit of everything. So what is Brain Jerk? We're just an entertainment company. We're here to change the world, baby.
It's like prestige, prestige worldwide.
Prestige worldwide, white.
No, it's been done. It's not a podcast. It's been done before.
In hose, boats and hose until we die.
Well, every day at 10 o'clock, you guys do the light it up.
Yep, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Every day. I do a podcast once a week most of the time, and that's so difficult. You guys do one at 10 o'clock. every single day
for the last year and a half.
It takes a lot out of you, bud.
But and then you still do the pillar talks.
Yep.
Also,
yeah, we do pillar talk where we talk like for Light It Up, you know, we sit there. That's the morning show where we sit, we might smoke, we whatever you're doing, you're drinking some coffee, you want to talk about whatever it is comes up. We talk about an animal or a plant. We call it the Earth Dweller of the Day. We give you some knowledge on that. And then we showcase a little bit of what's going on in the community. You know, our community, who's got a video out there, people doing videos, people doing knowledge, some mental health.
Some positive, anything where were real good based on mental health. I got my own struggles I go through, and I work hard at defeating mental health without medications. So, you know, we're just trying to find a way to live and a way to prosper with everybody.
Well, you know, Brain Jerk's just a bunch of friends that have become family, and we're just having fun and trying to spread the love. And along the way, people are joining us, and it's becoming a beautiful community. I'll tell you that.
Well, I think that's why I'd always try and check out the Light It Up shows. Like, I'm at work, so I can't always watch all of it, but I just kind of pop in. And it's like you said, it's friends. It's nobody that I've never known, but like,
from how all do I now
know?
World.
I know squirrels, and you know, you just get to know these people through the show, and it's cool. It's just like a hang, you know. It's always positive and yep. shit. So
yep,
always and, good and to check out.
Prestige worldwide, baby. We got family in Newfoundland. We got family in Ireland, Australia, Massachusetts, Canada, England. You name it. Sweden. We're here.
And they don't sell Molly no more.
They do not.
We got them all to stop selling Molly, guys. We're taking Molly off the streets.
Actually, we had somebody come in the other day from Africa.
Uh-huh, oh, yeah.
Holy shit.
That's official every continent except for Australia. I mean, except for Antarctica.
And we've had a couple penguins on the podcast.
You just got to cover them more on the Earth Dweller of the Day. You got to pander a little bit, you know, get that Antarctica listening.
Get one Eskimo. Yes, we did it.
Yeah, and then we do Pillar Talk, which we talk to entrepreneurs and people doing stuff out. And, you know, we've talked to you, Bad Guy. We've talked to Darren McCarty. We've talked to people from the community, business owners,
grinding their
games, fighters, you know, just people following their dreams.
Artists, fighters, wrestlers, comedians. I mean, dude, if you're doing something, you want to get your word out there, hit us up.
Yep.
We want to talk.
Yep. Yep.
And you guys do the Taste Of too, right?
Yeah, we're with Ryan, and we work with the development group and do the Taste Of, where we go around to different restaurants and we do some activities around town and show everybody what there is to do around Monroe, where we can eat. And we're not just solely in Monroe, but that's where our first season was based out of. And it's a really fun experience. If I'm being honest, it reminds me of like Anthony Bourdain. I'm living the Anthony Bourdain life.
And me and Dan, Ryan's like, he's like a friend of the family. Like, that's been a friend for a long time. I'm sure. So
yeah, me and the Duke over here had some times at the gathering.
So. Oh, we've had our times.
Yes, we have.
Are you guys going to the gather? Are you guys gonna do any Brain Jerk stuff at the gathering?
If I go, that's the only reason, if I'm being honest. I got a lot going on. Personally, I like to put now my energy into, you know, Brain Jerk stuff instead of ICP stuff, because I've just given them so much of my life already.
War.
Well, I appreciate you guys coming on. It was great having you.
Thank you for having us, dude.
Yeah, no doubt.
It's cool. I'm going to be Tyler the Typewriter next.
Tyler the Typewriter.
I really just want to be like, dude, Tyler the Typewriter got shot in the head 3 times because he was smelling a flower.
Tyler the Typewriter ran into the back of a van on his motorcycle.
Yep, and he was never the same.
It'd be Tyler the Can.
Tyler the Tin Can.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude. This was a great show, though. I liked this.
Yeah, we had a good time.
Yeah, I was really excited to have you guys on. I really appreciate it, man.
Yeah, dude, don't be afraid to ask again.
Even though we were running late, that's actually pretty early for us. So I'm just saying, we fairly had our shit together.
Hey, that's all right.
Hey, I know
about
how
as professional as we get. It's
I get
almost
it.
On time.
I deal with T-Rep every day. Hey, you guys are doing glorious.
You are.
All right. This is Say Hello to the Bad Guy. Thanks for coming and thanks for listening.
Peace out.
Peace out, guys.
Yeah, say hello to the bad guy. The good guy coming last place. Smell that dope when I pass by. I let my money at a fast pace. Say hello to the bad guy. Down bad, my mama had to be dad. Spent my birthdays in the trap, we had to work with what we had. She been working on a raise while trying to raise me like a man. Plus my daddy in the box and all my cousins in the can, man. And I don't need 100 friends, I just want 100 bands, 100 jugs, 100 scams, ay, ay. So out of money grabbed 100 hams. Said out of money, grabbed a bunch of bands. And I ain't wanna fall victim to that system or the pistols. Fuck a judge with a grudge, I'm blowing crud for my mental, ay. And I still keep it on me, run and tell your big homie first you meet your dead homie, ay. Yeah. Say hello to the bad guy, ay. The good guy coming last place. Smell that dope when I passed by. I let my money at a fast pace. Say hello to the bad guy. Fast lane, let my money at a fast pace, look like a drag race. Cut your re-up in my ashtray, I'm in my bag. Hey, good girl, bad face, slim waist and her ass fake. Hey, and she in love with the bad guy. Hey, but bad bitches never act right. Hey, she act up until that bag fly. I did a turn around in one night. Say hello to the bad guy. The good guy coming last place. You smell that dope when I pass by. I let my money at a fast pace. Say hello to the bad guy. Good guy coming last place. Smell the dope when I pass by.